That's going to be the enduring legacy of his presidency, is that he was an empire president.
We also just had the latest news out of Pakistan of a drone strike. The drone strikes that are continuing?
Yeah. I mean, well, both in Yemen and in Pakistan, you know, the U.S. is continuing forward with its not-so-covert war. And I think that, you know, President Obama, remember, in May, gave this big speech at the National Defense University where he owned the fact that they had killed four American citizens and then, you know, asserted that the United States is going to continue to do this. I mean, this is going to go on and on. This isn't stopping anytime soon.
Jeremy Scahill, we want to thank you for being with us, national security correspondent for The Nation, correspondent also for Democracy Now!, producer and writer of the documentary film Dirty Wars, The World is a Battlefield, and also the book by the same name. This weekend, the film has its South American premiere at the Rio International Film Festival in Brazil, where Jeremy Scahill will join Glenn Greenwald for a discussion afterwards. On October 15th, Dirty Wars will be released in the United States via Netflix and iTunes, as well as on DVD. That does it for the show. If you want to get a copy, you can go to our website at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke and Renee Feltz. We have two job openings. Check our website. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio with guest host Kathleen Stevenson. Today's guest is Mary Whitmore, local education activist and passionate advocate for the use of explicit phonics to teach reading in American schools. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Clinton Street Theater, featuring independent and revival films, the Rocky Horror Picture Show every Saturday at midnight, as well as the monthly KBOO Movie Night. The Clinton Street Theater is located at the corner of Southeast Clinton and 26th in Portland. Schedule and information at 503-238-5588 or cstpdx.com.
Good morning. This is Wednesday Talk Radio, and I'm not Lisa Loving, your usual Wednesday host. My name is Kathleen Stevenson. I'm sitting in for Lisa today. My guest is Mary Whitmore. She is a local education activist. She is a passionate advocate for the use of explicit phonics to teach reading in American schools, and we'll be talking about why she thinks this system works to teach kids to read and why she says it saves lives. And we will ask you listeners to weigh in about this very basic task of teaching reading and about what you think about the system of explicit phonics that we'll be talking about. Also, let us know, did you struggle learning to read? Do you know friends or family members who have struggled? What are your thoughts on what works? We'll open the phone lines in a few minutes, but first I'm going to speak with Mary about her work. Mary, you are a local educator and activist and a very strong advocate for this particular form of teaching reading. Tell us a little bit about your background in education.
First of all, I want to thank you very much for inviting me. I really appreciate it. I received my teaching credentials in 1998 and was trained by Forest Grove School District in the Riggs Explicit Phonics in Beaverton. And I just intuitively realized that that method was so far superior to anything I had seen as I was subbing in Multnomah County, Washington County. I just became a diehard fan.
Right. And what was it about that system compared with what you had seen that made it so so admirable to you?
Well, it's very intuitive. The word explicit phonics can put you off a little bit. It goes by several names. It goes by systematic phonics, analytical phonics, or pure phonics. But it all those names describe the phonograms that were discovered by Dr. Orton, Dr. Samuel T. Orton, and you can find him on Wikipedia. He was studying for to help children with dyslexia in the 20s, and he identified 71 phonograms, which are letter or letter combinations of the 42 phonemes or sounds of English. He was a neurologist. I mean, this is actually science. And he created these phonograms, and working with other teachers, he figured out how to deliver the phonograms in a certain way. It's called direct instruction, and it's called Socratic instruction. And it's quite structured. The children have to memorize the 71 phonograms, but that only takes about a month. And that once you have those phonograms, you learn how to mark vocabulary words, and the progress is so fast. When I asked Holly Denman, who's the director of Cascade Heights Public Charter School, how long does it take you to teach reading? She said 36 weeks. So that's 1 year. And public schools are teaching reading first grade, second grade, third grade. Their system is not efficient.
So let's break it down a little bit. This system, explicit phonics, as you mentioned, deals with these phonograms. Basically, is this the addition of some what would almost be like letters to the alphabet? Talk about what it actually is.
Okay. The 71 phonograms start out with the 26 letters of the alphabet that we all know. But instead of learning the names of the letters, the children associate the writing of that particular symbol with the sound or sounds it makes. For example, where sight reading might teach C, that you know how to make a C, the child in explicit phonics would make that C symbol, but they would say k-s, because C actually makes two sounds in our language. And then after the 26 letters of the alphabet, there's 45 combinations. For example, what we would call TH. As the child is writing correctly from day one, TH on their special paper with a line drawn in the middle to help them make the letters properly, they would say th. In other words, there's a soft TH and a voiced TH. But TH makes both of those sounds in our language. And the one of the most beautiful things about the way Dr. Orton developed his list is that you learn them in the order of frequency in our language. So in that particular example, th is more common than the voiced th. But, and so once you've got these phonograms in order in your brain, when you hear the word think, you know TH is the phonogram for that. But when you hear those, th, you know that that's the second sound of TH. You know how to spell that sound. And you know that TH, the soft TH, is more common than the voiced TH.
Okay. So what age group do you teach this system to?
Well, my daughter asked me if her two-year-old could start learning, and I said no. Usually, Myrna McCulloch, who published the system that I learned under, said as soon as a child can sit down and hold a pencil and knows what the line is, you know, to form the characters on the line properly, they can start learning to read. But, you know, that doesn't happen always at 4 years old. It might be five. I don't think it would be any later than 5 that a child could properly hold a pencil and write. Children get so excited about writing with their crayons, writing with chalk, and they have this drive. Once they see other people reading and writing, they want to do it too. And this is a magical open window between 4 and 7. Kids can learn 2 or 3 languages at once. I mean, their brains are so wired to do this. Unfortunately, because our national education policy has been sight reading / whole language for 93 years, a lot of kids, about 20%, according to the International Dyslexia Association, about 20% cannot learn with sight reading. They need the multisensory 4 different avenues of the brain at once, which is what explicit phonics teaches. Seeing, hearing, speaking, and actually physically writing the phonogram all at the same time.
So sight reading, explain what that is for people who might not know what that means.
Well, I can't give you a very technical explanation, but I was going to school in about 1952, and I had the See Dick, See Jane, See Spot Run. That's sight reading, where you memorize the word, because there's relatively few common words. I mean, we only need a pretty small percentage of the total words of English to communicate normally. And so the Dolch word list got developed, which was, I think, the 200 most used words in up to third grade. So the child has to memorize these words, which they can do. A lot of them can. But they can't take it to the next level. They can't understand what that word means. And they can't comprehend what they've read. They can just maybe spell run, which is great, but it's not enough if you don't know runner, running. You know, it's language is very complicated.
Yeah.
And then the whole language part is also a catchword you'll hear, and that means using children's literature in the classroom to help them get a bigger picture of life and exercise their reading ability. The Riggs program constantly emphasized when I was getting my little week training, not W-E-A-K, but W-E-E-K, they said, you have to incorporate good children's literature like every day. You have to have a little bit of that reading because that is going to reinforce and encourage their drive to learn how to read better. So, but I will mention right now, it's a good place. I got my teaching certificate at Portland State University in 1998. And when it came to the subject of reading, they said, we don't teach you how to teach reading. Because as soon as you get into your district, they'll give you the materials they want you to use. And that was it. That was one sentence. And I know that there's a lot of dissatisfaction with teacher training programs nationally, because the National Teacher Quality Association, that might not be the exact name, but just recently came out with a survey of 1,000 universities in the United States, and 70% failed the mark. They're just, and I'm a teacher. I got my training at PSU, and I loved my training. I loved my professors. I do very well in the school environment. But once I found out that the programs they were using to teach reading were lame, then I had to speak out.
I'm speaking with Mary Whitmore. As you can tell, she is a very strong advocate for a different way of teaching reading in the schools. It's called explicit phonics, and she is advocating that the schools use this program, and we'll be talking about that more during this show. Meanwhile, we ask you to call in with your questions or comments. The number to call, 503-231-8187. Did you struggle learning to read? Do you know friends or family members who have struggled to read? What are your thoughts on what works? What do you think of what Mary's talking about? And we do already have a caller. Joanne is on the line. Good morning, Joanne.
Jen,
whoops.
I have to speak out.
I think Joanne's radio is on, so we'll go back to talking to Mary until we can actually connect with Joanne. Mary, to keep on the system, you mentioned dyslexia. How are people who have been diagnosed as dyslexic helped by the system? If you could talk some more about that.
Well, that's the question that I have the least experience with. But I did find out that there is an International Dyslexia Association. Its website is interdys.org. And there's an Oregon branch called ORBIDA, ORBIDA.org. And the international organization has 8,000 members around the world. They've been, actually, you're probably not going to believe this, because the schools, the public schools, are actually fighting the diagnosis of dyslexia. There are some schools in the Portland area who forbid ORBIDA tutors to come in on the premises of the school. I mean, I don't know how this got so controversial, but I would, if you have any questions about dyslexia, I would go to those two websites. They have testing, they have tutors, they have a lot of research material at those sites.
And what do you think it is about explicit phonics that helps with the teaching of people who have been diagnosed as dyslexic?
Well, it's the teaching of explicit phonics, according to, and again, it goes by many names. There's been an evolution. The first evolution from Dr. Orton was called Orton-Gillingham, and that's really associated with the International Dyslexia Association. But then there was also Spalding, and a lot of Catholic schools still use The Writing Road to Reading by Romualdus Spalding. But after Spalding came Myrna McCulloch, and she authored The Writing and Spelling Road to Reading and Thinking, and that's what I got trained in. But all of these programs basically teach one phonogram at a time. And by the way, that's the official definition of explicit phonics, is that the sounds are taught in isolation, not associated with any key words or word families. And so if a child is learning how to write the letter as they hear it and say it and see it, it's less likely that they will reverse their B's and D's, which is a classic example of dyslexia. So I would, go ahead.
Before we go on, we do have some callers built up on the phone line.
Okay.
So we're going to try the phone lines again, and we're going to try Joanne again. Hi, Joanne.
Yeah, hello. Can you hear me?
Uh-huh.
Okay. First of all, I remember in the 1940s when I was in school in New York, I had low grades in reading. But I think with me personally, it had to do with being shy and introverted. But I was wondering, the neurologist, what part of the brain do we use in reading, and where do the eyes come into this process? And also, I don't know if you can answer this too, computers and cell phones have taken over our daily life, and I was wondering where reading those objects comes into this. And I will listen to you off the air.
Thank you, Joanne. Those are some interesting questions. The brain and the
first,
eye.
Yeah, the first one, what part of the brain learns reading, or And I don't really have a good answer for that. I know there's audiovisual. I know there's the frontal lobe. The eyes, of course, are very, very important. That's probably why sight reading got so popular in the first place, because we do rely on our eyes for a lot of our learning. Perhaps the Samuel T. Orton entry in Wikipedia would talk more about the basics of the neurology involved. As far as computers go, Myrna McCulloch and the Riggs Institute never endorsed online Riggs explicit phonics instruction. She was old school. I met her just before she passed away. She was in her 80s when I met her, and she was so brilliant, just a genius. But she did not really relate to the computer method of teaching. However, I do relate to it. I have put 18 videos on YouTube to teach the phonograms, and you can go there. It's called Explicit Phonics by Mary 1, and then Explicit Phonics by Mary 2 through the end 18. And I'm going to, as soon as I get enough help and time, I am going to put on a series on marking the vocabulary words with the phonograms, which is a really important second step. Eventually, I think we'll figure out how to teach this with computers. I don't know. I'm sort of imagining a keyboard with the phonograms for keys instead of just the 26 letters. How about that?
You're listening to Mary Whitmore. She is a local educator and also an education activist. She really believes in explicit phonics as a way to teach reading. And this is Kathleen Stevenson sitting in for Lisa Loving today on Wednesday Talk Radio. If you have issues you want to talk about, you can give us a call, issues related to reading and learning to read, 503-231-8187. We do have Linda on the phone. Hi, Linda.
Hi. Thanks, Kathleen, for this great show. I am in my early 60s, and I learned to read in a variety of ways because I went to a different school for all of my first 5 years of school. But phonics was what was emphasized in my home, and I remember when I went to schools where they didn't do phonics, it was really hard for me. And I'm a really, most people would consider me an exceptional reader. I read a lot, read fast, read all the time as a child to escape from my own quietness and introvertedness, like Joanne said. And so phonics was really important to me. I don't know that it was that method specifically, but I do know that that was the way that I learned. And I can remember, I can hear my mother's voice today saying, sound it out, sound it out. And but I also learned something when I was a social worker working with teenagers, which was that when someone went into, and I believe it was Seattle Juvenile Detention Centers, and worked with kids reading, these were mostly young men who had either no ability to read or very low ability to read and were in their 18 to 21-year-old age span. And when they worked with them with phonics, they learned. It was like this huge light went on at this one juvenile detention center in terms of how rapidly these people who had been completely given up on learned to read. And I think we have social studies that show how important learning to read is for whether a person just makes it in life, period. And we have young people graduating with a real inability to read. So I'm very interested in this program. Does she know if this was the types of phonics that were taught way back in the 50s? Because I was in first grade in like 55.
Mary?
And I can take all the answers off the phone.
Okay. Thank you, Linda. Thank you.
Thank you so much for calling in. I hear this story so frequently about people that struggle to learn to read. I give out information at the Forest Grove Farmers Market on Wednesdays, and people will just come up to me and say, phonics saved my life. And I'm glad that Kathleen mentioned that. And the first thing she said was how this can save lives. At first I thought, well, Is that really correct? And then now I'm saying, yes, it is. Because if you don't learn how to read and you get out of high school, you basically can't get a job. You need money. You might turn to crime. And sometimes you'll get away with it for a while. And sometimes you'll end up in prison. As far as what type of phonics they used in that particular teenage instruction, I don't know. It could have been explicit phonics because, like I said, this has been around for 93 years in all different kinds of outfits. But basically phonics, it has to be the way we learn to read because that's what words are. Words are sounds. But I'm so glad that you're being aware of outreach for these kids. They certainly deserve. Which reminds me, I think of reading as an education. I think of this whole issue as an education justice issue, because children have a right to read. It's their heritage. And our schools have not chosen the most cost-effective way. I just want to mention right here the cost. In 2010, my district, Forest Grove, bought a $600,000 reading program from Pearson. Pearson is the biggest publisher in the world, and they make $7 billion a year profit. They're based in England. And she did that while laying off librarians and closing one of our rural elementary schools, Gales Creek. So when she bought that program, I knew it wouldn't work. And I said, could you set up a measurement where we can know that investment of money was worth it? Like in 3 years, we expect our scores to go up 5%, or in 5 years, we expect our scores to go up 10%. Something measurable. But the board and the superintendent did not want to listen to that. And now we've got 3 years of this $500,000 program, and our the elementary school reading scores went down an average of 20%.
We're going to take some more calls, Mary, and we're listening to Mary Whitmore. She's a local education activist, and we're talking about her support for explicit phonics to teach reading. Next, Drew is on the line. Drew, your comment or question, please.
Hi, I just really was enjoying your show. I learned to read at a very, very young age. I was probably 4 when, my brothers and my sisters and my mom taught me to read out of the comics with phonics, spell it out. So by 7, I had a really, really good grasp on the language. I could actually read it.
Isn't it fun?
Yeah, it was. It was like, it's so mind expanding. And then I'm into like second grade and I can actually read. And I remember my first teacher, Miss Darst, telling me about the Dewey Decimal System, if anybody ever remembers that. That you could actually find out anything you want to know. I mean, the world is an open book, for real. And it's really magic. And then later on, my friend's dad, he was a contractor. He was a mathematical genius, but he was 60 years old and he could not read. So we taught him to read by watching Sesame Street with him.
Wow.
And doing the phonics. And he picked it up and he was good enough, from nothing to I can, pick it out and sound it out. It was amazing. So phonics, I think, is a really, really good thing. Later on in life, I remarried to another woman and I had a stepchild and he was really having some problems and struggles in school and nobody really dialed in on it. The fact is he could not read. He couldn't read well. So once we started working on that with phonics and working through those little processes, all of a sudden now he's an avid reader. So
Congratulations.
I applaud you for your efforts.
Thank you, Drew.
I really do.
Thank you, Drew. Thank you for calling.
Thank you, guys. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Bye.
Number to call is 503-231-8187. Mary. And we have a caller waiting. Mary wants to say one thing before we go to Francis.
According to the USA Today, America is 22nd in the world in literacy.
Okay, Francis, you're on the line.
I am greatly appreciating your show today. I was taught in a Catholic school, and I can remember learning A, E, I, O, U, and sometimes Y, and those were the first letters we learned, the vowels, and we learned their sounds, the long sound and the short sound. And by the time we started reading, we could sound out anything. And I can remember my older son, who went to Portland Public Schools, having a very difficult time in school, especially with literature and reading. And it wasn't until I pulled him out of the public schools, because he's also African-American and was dealing with a lot of negative expectations. And I've noticed when you speak of education justice, that it's happened with a lot of young African-American people who are just left behind because they don't know how to read. But I discovered when I started homeschooling him, when I say sounded out, he had no clue what that meant. And when he was 14, I started teaching him at home. And when he was 16, I allowed him, he passed the GED, and I allowed him to go to PCC as a 16-year-old, and he started taking theater. And while he was taking theater, we discovered, while he was rehearsing parts in plays, that when his partner, whoever was reading with him, read out loud, he understood everything that he was reading. And he had a form of dyslexia, but the school never, ever, ever diagnosed that, ever. And when his little brother was born, when he was 14, I was fortunate when he began school to be able to send him to a Catholic school for 3 years. And that child could sound out anything. He may not know what the word meant, but he could read it. And I was...
That's called decoding.
I was amazed at how much the phonics made a difference in my two sons' education. I mean, I wasn't really amazed. I wasn't surprised, but I'm really disappointed in the Portland Public Schools, and I'm not sure why they're not allowing those kind of discussions unless they just don't want to acknowledge their failure for so many years. I don't know. But they should be, because it's amazing what a child can do and learn when they're able to read.
Okay, Frances, thank you so much. Thanks. I think Mary's going to respond to you now. Thank you.
I really appreciate your comments, and I wanted to mention why the schools aren't using this program. That kind of struck a chord with me. Because Myrna McCulloch was in Beaverton with her Riggs Institute teaching explicit phonics, there were a lot of people that supported her, and they lobbied to pass ORS 337.275, and I'd like you to Google that. ORS 337.275. That law was passed in 1999, and it said every school in the state of Oregon had to have explicit phonics materials available to kindergarten-2 teachers. I was in the process of trying to find out who's responsible for enforcing that particular law when it got repealed last year in April. It was just gone. And I have a feeling it was because Governor Kitzhaber was getting ready for his Transform Education PK20 with his Oregon Education Investment Board, and he wanted to just do a clean sweep and start all over with a great reform. Actually, we had a great reform back in 1991 called the Oregon Education Reform Act. But I'd like to see that law reinstated, and I'd like to give some credit to Representative Ben Unger. I've been talking to him about this, and he's been very supportive. One of his aides is communicating with the Department of Education about this. But we need the grassroots lobbying. We need, people to join up, sign a petition, whatever. Let Salem know that we want explicit phonics in the classroom.
You're listening to Mary Whitmore. She's an education activist. And we are on Talk Radio, Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm Kathleen Stevenson, sitting in for Lisa Loving today. And we have some more callers to 503-231-8187. Mike is on the line. Mike, how are you?
Great. Morning. Thanks for the show.
You're welcome.
The last caller touched on my question. What does it look like, or how does it work in the classroom with the teacher addressing not just reading, but retention of the meaning of words? That's always been a big question. How does that, what extra step is done to integrate both?
Decoding as well as comprehension. You're talking about reading comprehension.
Right. How does that happen? Do you have to switch back and forth, or do you do a week of this and a week of that? I'll take my answer off the phone.
Thank you, Mike.
Well, Mike, you have kind of hit the nail on the head. It doesn't get taught. That's the problem. If the teacher can't teach the decoding in time, you see, about 20% of students can learn very well with sight reading whole language. I am one of the lucky students who did learn that way. But there's 20% at the bottom that don't have a clue. And then the middle 60% kind of sort of get it, and they can function in society, but they certainly don't love reading and learning. With this phonics program, I actually volunteered at the Cascade Heights Public Charter School that uses Riggs Explicit Phonics on Mondays last year, except for 2 months. And I wanted to see this. I wanted to answer that very question. How do you get from the decoding with explicit phonics up through the eighth grade? I actually did not learn enough. I visited every single classroom. There's only one classroom per grade in that school. But they adopted a reading program, a writing program called Writing Excellence Initiative or something, and I didn't particularly like it. But you've kind of opened the door to what I really do like, which is my own program called Easy Grammar with Color Coding. But that's a topic for a different show. Yes, the comprehension is absolutely critical, but it goes along with the decoding, and usually if the child can't decode, they're not going to be able to comprehend anything. I do want to mention one thing about the brain that's very important. Dr. Howard Gardner identified 8 different ways that we learn, or learning categories. Logical, mathematical is only one. There's musical intelligence. There's kinesthetic, like acrobats that can do fantastic things. There's interpersonal. And I think some of the criminals have strong interpersonal intelligence because they bond, you know, with other people and the homies and whatnot. And then there's intrapersonal, which is a person that can understand their own inside emotions and thoughts and whatnot. So even if a person can't learn to read, like another caller said, he knew someone who got like successful in business, but he didn't know how to read. That can happen because they have the different kind of intelligence and they relate to people and people can support them and give them the information they need. But that's very, very, very rare.
So, Mary, just to go back to the caller's question. So the meaning aspect, is there in explicit phonics, what is the area of meaning? How is that handled in explicit phonics? We talked about a lot about the sounds, mm-hmm. sounding it out, the words, but mm-hmm. I think, you know,
okay.
How is the meaning?
I understand the question. After you learn the phonograms, The vocabulary is taught by the teacher introducing a word, and then the students say, what is the first, the teacher says, what is the first sound you hear? What's the next sound? The next sound. And you mark your vocabulary word. And after a few weeks, you start learning about prefixes, which are parts of the word before the word that change the meaning of the root word. You learn about suffixes, which are the ending parts that change the meaning of the root word. And you learn about homonyms, which are words that sound alike but have different meanings. You learn about antonyms, which are words that are opposites. So that's like the basis. You learn that words come from different countries. For instance, that English doesn't have any words that end with I except the word I. All those words, spaghetti, ski, whatever it is, came from a different country. And a lot of our words come from French. And a lot of our words have any word with PH in it that sounds like F, that comes from the Greek language. So you have to study the words and get a feeling for them. And then when you get into grammar, you learn that there a word plays a different role in the sentence. It can be a verb or an adjective. Like I like to go, let's go dancing. Dance would be a verb because it's an action word. But if I say, will you take me to the dance? That's a noun. So once you start learning how to relate to these words and change, see how they change as they're used, then you get more into the comprehension. With my Easy Grammar with Color Coding, I have a sentence poster that has four parts, and children learn how to make sentences stating a fact, stating an opinion, giving instructions, or asking a question. And about 95% of English sentences go into those four categories. So, and, you know, there's just so many things that you can do at home. You can play different word games. I have a game with my daughter where we would spell everything. Spell every question and every answer we had for a little while. Okay.
Okay, and we have some callers built up again, so we're going to try to take some calls for Mary Whitmore. And as soon as Steve, our engineer, is ready, we would like to go to another caller. Steve? Vernon is on the line. Vernon.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Good morning.
This is a fascinating discussion.
Thank you.
I was fortunate to grow up in a family that had a tradition of reading to each other and playing with words. And I learned to read well before I got to school. In fact, I thought Dick, Jane, and Sally were about the most boring stuff I'd ever run into. But that was because I was raised on Dr. Seuss. I was reading Dr. Seuss before I went to school, and he was so much fun. Mm-hmm. In fact, I had some correspondence with Theodore Geisel. When I was 4 or 5, I wrote him a letter, and he responded to me and encouraged me to write.
I'm in awe of you.
Well, it was my family that we played with words all the time. We would sit around the table and play with a dictionary. That was the only thing you needed, was little slips of paper were handy, and someone would pick a word that no one knew, and then we'd all make our best guess at what that word meant, and we'd write it down, and the person who had picked it would read all of those different ones, inserting the actual definition, kind of simplified, in there somewhere, and whoever could figure out which one was the right one, we didn't really keep score, we just played. It was fun.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't have a television.
Mm-hmm. Interesting point.
I raised my daughter with no television in the home, and I think it made a huge difference. Television is such a time waster.
I second the motion.
And it takes away from family interaction. And
I have to admit right here, Vernon, and I appreciate your comments, that the two things I watch on TV, one is the news, which I usually regret watching that, But America's Game. America's Game. Do you know what that is?
No, I don't.
Wheel of Fortune. Solving word puzzles is so much fun. You know, I just never get tired of it. But I think you can see that since we've had sight reading whole language for 93 years, and by the way, somebody asked, you know, why aren't the public schools using this? When I asked Myrna McCulloch that, she rubbed her fingers together in the sign for money. She said, yeah. Follow the money. The publishers have their feet in the trough, and they are not going to get out of the way. But I'm really glad that you're, you know, spreading the fun of reading and playing with words. I mean, look at how many people love crossword puzzles. I mean, but if you don't have those skills, you're not going to pass them on to the next generation. We've had four generations now of people, 20% falling out the bottom, 20% at the top doing wonderfully, and 60% muddling in the middle. So all those people have babies and raise their children. So
and a significant portion of our society is behind bars.
You know, I mentioned that.
1%, and a lot of those people are. I did some time for civil disobedience. I was surprised at how little reading, you know, how many of those people can't even read a newspaper. I helped teach a guy some reading while I was doing my jail time, but that's an aside. I wanted to ask you if you work on the global phenome set, because there are so many languages in this world, and I've heard you talking about that, and if children, especially preschool children, learn the phenomes early on, they have an easier time learning those languages.
Okay, Vernon, thank you. Mary's going to respond, and then we have to move. Thank you very much. Okay, thanks a lot. Okay.
Thank you, Vernon, for calling in. And I have taken this to Korea. I have taken it to Costa Rica. I have been in schools in England and in Germany. And I am bilingual myself. That's why I was really a favorite substitute in the Forest Grove School District, because they have the Spanish immersion programs, finally. But as far as, you know, different language, like Swahili might have a letter that sounds like, you know, and I don't know about international languages. But children, wherever they live, they learn what their parents speak. And if their parents are positive and supporting, they're going to want to talk more. And pretty soon, they might want to read and write. There were generations of the First Nation, the Native Americans, they didn't even write anything down. It was oral tradition. So I don't know if that answered your question.
Well, we're going to take a couple more calls, Mary. We have some callers on the line, and we're going to go to our next caller here with Mary Whitmore, who's an education activist. She is very, very passionate about supporting the use of explicit phonics in American schools. And actually, before we go to that caller, how do people get a hold of you, Mary, if they wanted to connect with your campaign?
They can email me.
Okay.
It's Mary Whitmore, my name, at hotmail.com. That's the best way, although, you know, I am 66 years old, so I don't do my email every single day, but, you know, if I start getting some interesting emails, I'll do a better job of that.
Okay. Mary Whitmore at gmail.com, is that what you said?
Hotmail.
Hotmail.com, okay. And let's go to our next caller. Joan is on the line.
Hello.
Hello, Joan.
Hi. I have two questions. I'll take them off the air.
Okay.
One is based on the last question, is has this been applied to learners of English as a second language? And the other question would be, how might this apply to learners on the autism spectrum?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Joan, for calling in. I wonder if you are a special ed teacher or an ESL teacher. She took it offline.
Yeah.
Okay. This is an interesting question about ESL. I happen to know that a teacher that is familiar with explicit phonics taught adults in Hillsborough who are Spanish speakers. She taught them English with explicit phonics, and I assume she was successful because she did it for quite a while. The Spalding program, spalding.org, they have a guide, for, a teacher's guide in Spanish. So Spanish-speaking teachers can teach Spanish-speaking children English. As far as basically, Joan, you know probably from your question, you know that Spanish is the ultimate phonetic language. Every letter has one sound. And it's so much easier to learn than English. I think that this, the way we teach the phonograms, it would be very easy to teach Spanish with this method. However, the method that, no, you're talking about teaching English to Spanish-speaking children. Yes, is the short answer. This can be used for Spanish-speaking children, definitely. The other thing about autism, again, I don't have the experience in autism spectrum disorder, but I would refer those questions to the International Dyslexia Association because there might be a relationship between autism and dyslexia. I just don't know.
Okay, Mary. We're going to take another phone call here. Marion is on the line for a question or comment about reading for Mary Whitmore. Mary.
Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
And I'm calling mostly in support at this point because one of my main questions was just answered. I was raised to learn to read phonetically from the home to the school. I was a military brat, and every school I went to taught phonetically until I had kids. So it never occurred to me that there was any other way that was being taught. And
Excuse me, let me just clarify, what year are you talking about? When did you notice a change?
Okay, so when I got to Portland, and I actually homeschooled him for about 3 years until they were ready, until my eldest was ready. He entered the public school system.
Wait a minute, hold on. Was this in the 80s? Was this in the
70s? This was 94 and 95
okay.
and 96. And
okay.
We were experiencing the downfall of, after Barbara Roberts' governorship, the whole education system in this state just started to go downhill. And so we got in on the end of the good and at the very beginning of the bad. And we were here for the whole bad, all of it.
Oh,
and, you know, the budget cuts, the teacher... teachers being fired the very next day, kids coming home crying. My son was one of them. But the middle son is the one son that I did not spend the same amount of time with as the first and the third. And he was the one that just was at the door, in the school, in the classroom. We couldn't keep him home. He's such a joy and such a social, interactive being. But with the youngest one, I was just so much more time with him, and so when I went into the other one's classroom to do volunteer time, I was absolutely shocked. I had no idea that they were being taught this other methodology. It defies logic, number one. I couldn't even fathom how and when I talked to the teacher, I think I was in a state of shock. I think I had time. It was hard for me to even talk to her. I couldn't even fathom what she was doing to these kids. I learned from her that she had been taught that way, too, that she didn't even know what I was talking about.
And Marion,
to this day, that same child, a young man now, has a problem spelling, whereas the other two just fly. They fly with their spelling. They fly over him, under him, around him. And so he, you know, has got some self. He's, you know, self-conscious about that, and I have worked with him, of course, since then. But, you know, he's not interested in sitting down with his mother at, you know, 8 and 9 and 10. He wants, you know, the teacher knows everything at that point.
Marion,
we're
going to have to let you wrap up because we have to fit one more caller in before.
Well, I will be emailing you. I am Woo-hoo! So ecstatic. This is the happiest thing I've heard in a long, long time.
Oh, yay, Marion, girl. Marion, thank Marion.
You. Well, thank you Bless very much, you. Marion.
I mean, good for
oh
you.
Oh, my God. I just want to cry. I can't believe there's a neighbor down the street, and her son can't read, and she can't read. And I couldn't believe it. They're from the Portland Public School System.
Okay. Thank you very much, Marion. Thank you for your call. And we will... We will be repeating the email for Mary Whitmore here, Mary Whitmore's name, Mary Whitmore, at hotmail.com. And we have one more call we're going to try to fit in the last. Oh, you want to? Oh, they gave up. Okay, so Mary, why don't you respond to the last caller?
Wow. Your pain. I hate to say, like Bill Clinton, I feel your pain. But as I'm giving out information to the public, so many people come up to me and they are so distraught. Their 8-year-old can't read, you know, and they're just absolutely at their wits' end. I wanted to say one thing when you mentioned about no money for schools. If the public schools take 3 years to teach reading in, you know, barely teach reading. They take 3 years to do that. And I'm saying that you can teach reading with explicit phonics in a year and a half. That's half the time, half the seat time that child needs to be in the school. The teacher needs to be teaching that child. In other words, if you use explicit phonics, which is a free program, and save a year and a half for each student that's learning how to read, it's almost impossible to calculate how much savings that is. And then you can use the money that you have that you were using to teach reading in a lame way, you can use it for math and science. So I'm looking forward to getting your email, Marion. Thank you.
And we are almost out of time with Mary Whitmore this morning, and I know that you have some things that you want to say here at the end, Mary. So we have about 3 minutes, and what is it that you want people to know in the final minutes of this program?
Thank you, Kathleen. Well, the first thing is get into your child's classroom, watch what's happening, see what's happening, visit an explicit phonics classroom, compare the work product. Number two, and most important of all, I have identified what I call TOWPA, T-O-W-P-A, stands for the Orton-Whitmore Phonics Alphabet. After the 26 letters that we all know and love, are 45 phonograms that Dr. Orton identified in the 20s. So we have 71 symbols instead of 26 to learn in kindergarten. I know it sounds like a lot, but it goes really fast when you're young and you can learn this so quickly. If public schools could adopt TOPA, and this is a free concept, instead of teaching with 26 letters in kindergarten to second grade, you use TOPA, which includes the phonograms that make the sounds of our language. It doesn't cost any money. It just is a little bit of teacher training. I don't care if you use Spalding or Gillingham or Riggs or Blosser or anything else, as long as it is an outgrowth of the 71 phonograms that Dr. Orton developed, identified. He was a neurologist. It's just going to solve so many problems. This is fundamental. I worked for 5 years on the Equal Rights Amendment from 1978 to 1982 because I felt that was a fundamental change that needed to happen. But now I'm saying this is for all kids in America. Then we'll take it outside of America. But first, let's fix our public schools.
Okay, Mary. Now, Mary, you mentioned earlier some YouTube possibilities. Tell again how they can look at your work on YouTube. We're hearing the music to wrap up.
Yeah, that is Explicit Phonics by Mary 1, Explicit Phonics by Mary 2, etc. to 18.
Okay, great. My guest has been Mary Whitmore here on Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. This is Kathleen Stevenson sitting in for Lisa Loving today. Mary Whitmore is local education activist and passionate advocate for the use of explicit phonics in American schools. Our website is back up, kboo.fm, and you can go there. If you missed part of this program, it will soon be uploaded to the website, I believe. So thank you very much for listening, and stay tuned for the Wednesday Morning Political Perspectives program. We'll hear Economic Update with Richard Wolff speaking with Sarah Jaffe, staff writer for In These Times, about low-paid U.S. workers mobilizing.
Good morning. It's 9 a.m. You are tuned to KBOO Portland. And you heard Kathleen tell us coming right up, you're going to hear some of the series of Economic Update with economist Richard Wolff. At 9:30, we'll hear about the International People's Assembly against the banks and against austerity, which is happening in Detroit in early October. The guest is from the Coalition for an International People's Assembly Against the Banks and Against Austerity and the Pan-African Newswire. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, an in-depth update on occupied Palestine with Middle East Children's Alliance co-director Ziad Abbas. We hear a young Palestinian student activist from occupied Hebron, and we'll hear excerpts from the new documentary film Welcome to Hebron. And at 11 on the Recovery Zone, Stephanie Potter hosts a look at the continuing movement for single-payer health care insurance. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not a member, you can go to our website, which is kboo.fm, and click on Donate Today to become one.
The KBOO Book and Record Sale is back. KBOO